I'm David Schreiner Kahn, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today's interview is with Ruben Quiñones. Ruben is the director of new media at Path Interactive and also teaches at NYU. He's a well-known blogger and speaker. Ruben, welcome to the show.
David, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
So, from your background, I see that you've spent a lot of time in roles where you're very active out there leading people in the social media sphere.
Right.
And you're out there speaking, interacting with people.
Right.
Was there a pivot point earlier in your career that led you to be in these roles where you're taking leadership?
Yeah. I think, you know, and I've always been in some client-facing capacity, you know, since we get right out of school, doing sales. And one thing which might, you know, I think people probably would mutually feel the same way. You know, one thing I didn't like about sales, and I'm not supposed to say this as someone that has been selling for, you know, the last decade and a half, is I didn't like the process of cold calling or reaching out to people that I didn't know. Like I was more about nurturing the relationship. And the only way I felt that I could do that was to provide value. So when I took on this position, which is pretty unique in a way, because I guess I'd call myself an intrapreneur, right? I'm within a company, but I'm making entrepreneurial decisions. About 8 years ago, I realized, not necessarily consciously, but subconsciously, I was thinking about how I can create this process where I would be known and people would pick up the phone and call me. Even if I wasn't just strictly sales and I was doing a number of things. And it didn't happen overnight. I mean, it was something that that took years to kind of firm itself out. I've always hustled. You know, I've always worked hard. But I've always worked smart too. So I wasn't necessarily, you know, following other people and what they were saying. You know, I was following multiple people maybe and hearing what they were saying, but also I was looking to maybe experiment and see what would work. I think the pivot point, if you will, is probably 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. And I remember, you know, if you know, anyone in the audience goes to BNI, right, Business Network International, used to do that years ago. And I remember asking people, hey, if you know anybody, there's one skill that I really had that was good was being able to speak in front of people. And I realized maybe I can leverage that to basically build my own personal brand. So I went ahead and I started asking people. And I didn't necessarily get a response, but there was 1 week someone came in and basically offered me their facilities. So, you know, I basically put together an email contact list and I put together, I'm trying to remember what the session was. I think it was probably around, you know, building your brand online or building your social media presence online. You know, and maybe only 10, 15 people showed up. And I didn't let that deter me. I kind of realized, you know, maybe I can continue to do this. And eventually I did a few, you know, bars and other facilities here in New York City. And, eventually someone met me and they were actually an ex NYU student who basically saw me speak and, realized that it was a, you know, very valuable experience for them and then put me in contact with NYU. So I could keep going on as far as all the different pivot points, but I think that opportunity led me to other opportunities where I started speaking in bigger I guess, forums. So Web 2.0 Expo, which is no more, it was a big digital conference, picked me up from a video that I submitted, and that kind of led to other opportunities because there's an international audience that typically comes to those conferences. So I think fast forward, you know, a few years, you know, I've traveled the world. I've gone to London, Norway, Brazil, among some other places, and then here locally. And I'm at a point where I actually don't speak as much because of time. I've built up a certain book of business. I'm keeping clients happy, and trying to now figure out how I can take on more and develop a process for what I've already created, which is basically inbound marketing. I have people, you know, at least a few times a week that reach out to me, and now instead of me chasing someone, I have to now pre-qualify them and spend more time figuring out if it's a realistic program or not, or if this is something that I feel like I can take on and make happen, because I have a lot of credibility in the marketplace, and I want to make sure that I'm delivering value to that person.
So let's go back a bit. So it sounds to me like you have figured out what works well for you, given your skill set and your personality in terms of marketing and sales.
Mm-hmm.
But before you figure that out, was there a point when you were not sure what to do and feeling a little stuck?
Yeah, and you know, you always go through that, right? You have to kind of go through that, and I think the fact that you go through that, you basically care, you know, shows that you care about what you do. I'm sure I've had a number of points in my career where I felt that way, and you know, I just didn't necessarily let it stop me. I would just maybe take a step back, try to make a smarter decision, the next initiative I put in place. So a specific example might be, me emailing my list, right? That's been happening for the last 10 years and trying to deliver value that way. That may not work as well as it did, you know, years ago. Like, I have to couple that with something else. Meaning if you haven't seen me in 7 or 8 years and you get these emails from me that are somewhat value driven, but there's no, you know, I haven't seen you in a long time, or there's just not enough value within the written form, it may not work as well as it may have in the past. So I've got to think about another way to potentially get in front of the right audience, right? Because it's, I think what we do a lot of times, at least in a sales capacity in developing new businesses, do a lot of pray and spray campaigns, which is good from an experimental standpoint, but eventually you have to get a bit more strategic and take a step back and realize, all right, what is it? Who's my desired audience? And where do I want to be? And how do I deliver value to that desired audience? Why would they stop and listen to me? Or why would they stop and do business with me? Is, I think, what you have to ask yourself. Because the pray and spray approach pretty much, and it's marketing 101, I think the if you take out the relevancy in your messaging, the more broad you get, the less conversions you'll get, meaning the less people that will actually activate a relationship with you. The more relevant you are and the more specific and targeted you are, that increases the ratio of potentially doing business or nurturing or developing a relationship.
So before you figured out how inbound marketing could work for you, How did you answer the question of why would someone want to do business with you? Before you knew the answer to that question, how did you figure it out?
Yeah, I don't necessarily know that I have written down somewhere, but I think as far as asking myself what I can deliver to that particular audience, I think I put myself in their shoes, right? Instead of it being about the marketing that I have to offer as a solution, you kind of have to put them yourselves in their shoes as far as when they walk in every day, what are the typical challenges that they have? What are they looking to figure out? Because I think we are used to, for years, you know, especially when, I mean, when it comes to sales, you've been trying to, usually you're just going out and you're trying to see, put out your message and see who listens, instead of actually listening and then putting out your message. So I think getting a good understanding of someone's role within an organization, what does that look like? And what are the three or four challenges that they typically have? And you know what? It can be done in a variety of formats. I mean, the great thing is we have the internet. We can kind of figure that out. I mean, you can even look at a job description and know what the typical responsibilities are for someone in a particular role.
Responsibilities doesn't necessarily tell you what their challenges are.
Not necessarily, but and you can take it a step further. I mean, you could do a cup of coffee, an interview, and almost treat it almost kind of like you're trying to get a particular position. And there's more time associated with maybe interviewing someone in a particular position or role within a company, right, to get an idea. If I'm going to spend all this time going after, let's say, you know, the director of operations at a particular vertical, I might want to just maybe reach out to them and say, hey, can I maybe pick your brain or have a few questions about your industry? And they may not respond, but I think it's innate in us, a lot of us as human beings, if we had the time and, you know, for the most part, if we are good at what we do and do want to give back, we do like helping people. You know, and if anything, that's why I'm compelled sometimes to have a cup of coffee with someone, because I want to help them out, right? You know, that's the least I can do, knowing that I was once in that situation. So I think you can play on that human emotion, which is basically empathy, and actually have specific questions to ask them in their role and understand what their challenges are. I mean, you could go the route of just sourcing this information and seeing what is it that they read, right? What is it that they subscribe to, and get into their head a little bit as far as, you know, if there are specific publications geared to particular industries or roles, you know, they usually do a good job of speaking to people in those industries. And I think it gives us a clue as to what, you know, what we should be projecting in our messaging.
Ruben, let's reverse things a little bit. Tell me a little bit about places where you personally have felt challenged in the work that you do.
I would say right now, you know, my biggest challenge, and still figuring out, is I think because I'm so open. And I do like having fun. So anybody that works here at the office, you know, we have 40 employees here. They know that I have kind of like an open door policy in my office. And I literally am staring at a couch right now. And I think we call that the therapy couch, because people typically come in and sit down and have conversations with me. So I have to negotiate between, you know, maybe being someone who's an authority within the organization and be willing to listen to people. But I realize there's a certain amount of value in that, and that I you know, if I can be more open to the employees here, there's a sense of loyalty that's developed, not only with me, but the company. And I genuinely do care about them. But negotiating, nurturing that element of my job and the 50 other things I had to do, which is keeping 30 clients happy, you know, making sure that I'm ready for my next NYU course, and, you know, that I'm a good father to my two girls at home. So I think negotiating all of that is particularly a challenge, but I'm thankful for that challenge, because that wasn't my challenge, you know, 5-10 years ago. It was more about how do I get to a position where I'm not just making more money, but I'm I'm a bit of a thought leader in my space, and that people think of me when they're thinking about search marketing or doing social media, that I'm one of the two or three people that they think about because they heard me somewhere or they remember that conversation. They realize that I deliver value and honesty, not just a product. So I'm thankful for my challenges now, which is more so the distractions that I have in being overwhelmed with all of my responsibilities. It's definitely a challenge, but it's also, a welcome challenge.
Ruben, you mentioned that you realized at one point that speaking was a talent that you had, and it was a way of showing your leadership skills and beginning to influence other people.
Right.
Can you think back to a time when you were taking a big leap of faith by accepting a speaking gig before a new audience that seemed a little daunting?
Take you back to that? I mean,
yeah. I mean, it's a common problem.
Yeah.
That people in our community face. Right. I'm trying something new for the first time. I'm exposing myself. I'm doing it before an audience of people I don't know. Is it going to work? Is it not going to work? Am I sticking my neck out? Am I going to flounder horribly?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I think it, I think the way I developed it, it kind of all happened within a reasonable time frame where I kind of was, acclimated. And so, going from speaking to 10 people, like you would have to be pretty talented to go from not speaking at all to 300-400 people. That's a big leap of faith if you don't have that confidence. But I think you can build up to that level. And there's a number of things that I did that were, had a pseudo effect to potentially speaking in front of a lot of people. I think simultaneously, as I was building my brand and also having fun, and it's something that I liked doing, I did my own little TV show for the company, right? Something that I wish I had time to continue to do, but is something that I may have done, 60, 70 episodes in the last few years. Something that I did a couple years ago, and it got me comfortable in front of the camera, which it has its own challenge. I think you just build and you take baby steps and you look at the options around. There's plenty of communities and meetups probably geared at getting people to developing that sort of confidence, because it's different. It's a different environment than speaking one-on-one or even to a few people. To go in front of even 20, 30 people can be nerve-wracking for some folks. And even to this day, I've spoken, in front of probably at the peak, 400 people. It's a lot of people. I still will get in front of a group of 50, 100 people. And there's some nervousness in some cases, right? Because I want to do well and I'm trying to feel the audience out, and I hope that it goes well. Whether it's 50 people or 400 people, it's still an opportunity to make an impression. But I think that I'm a lot more confident because, between doing classes and doing these smaller group formats, I've kind of worked my way up to doing the larger format. And then I realized that, as much as I do really well there, I don't have the writing ability that I wish I had more of that ability as well, because that is truly powerful online. So it's also trying to acknowledge, hey, what is my skill set? Because I would say the written word is a powerful skill set as well when it comes to either developing your brand or communicating your message, more so now than it was, 15, 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Have you ever been in front of a group when you've done all your planning, you have everything set, you get up and you look at the audience and you get the sense that things are just not going well? You see people starting to drift off. They start looking at their cell phones. They get a little fidgety.
Yeah. Well, I think that actually, with social media conferences, you want them on their cell phones. But I still get that maybe when I teach at NYU and I – you know, for me, it's intimidating sometimes when I have students that come from MIT and Harvard, and I'm like, who am I teaching them how to do Facebook marketing or search? And I try not to get fixated on that one student. I do want to please them, but it is a matter of taking a step back. And so I think you can go through moments of trying to connect with the audience and have a human emotion element. And I do actually, you know, I think the first 30 seconds is telling of the entire presentation. So I usually have something that's canned, right, that I think I can throw out to the audience. And, you know, I think the more risk that you take, you know, I think calculated risks will make you more memorable, because it kind of sets the stage for the entire presentation. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you now realize when you do that and it doesn't work out, you might be digging yourself a bigger hole. And I think you only take that risk when you feel more comfortable in speaking in general. But one thing I do is, and I think has gotten me the opportunities that I wouldn't have otherwise, is I'm very personable. I'm not afraid to take a little bit of a risk, and appropriately, of course. And then as a result, I will, you know, I'll either get, you know, people seeking me out to either teach another course or, you know, speak somewhere. So it's because they remembered me. The content was 50% of it, but it was also, wow, he connected with me. You know, at the end of the day, people, you know, they can go online and listen to a webinar, but when you can be real, and I think there's a number of ways that you can be real. I tend to do it maybe with the tone of my voice, speaking about the current events. Other people are really good, and I'm working on the real life stories, and actually I have, you know, included that as well, is including a human element in my presentations, playing off the fact that you know, I have a little girl at home, and you know, there's probably other fathers in the audience, right? There's a lot of people that can appeal to being a parent, or you know, if you know, I'm in New York. You know, you would assume you can maybe make some, you can have some elements of New York in it. So I think projecting who you are and telling your story is not necessarily a bad thing. I think, you know, as long as it's done within appropriately and done in the right dosage, can go in a very long way.
Ruben, what's an example of a risk that you've taken that has not worked?
That's a good question. And that, and my, don't take my stump, my me being stumped as arrogance.
I not think, alone.
I think it's I think it might come down to, you know, me not even, you know, spending too much time on when I'm failed. And just looking at the next opportunity. So off the top of my head, I'm not particularly sure, but you know, maybe I would have said something that I was taking a risk, let's say in front of an audience, and it didn't maybe go over so well. I have enough of the confidence to maybe pivot and draw it back and go right to the content and realize that the audience or whoever I'm talking to is not relating to me. And that's where I might kind of take a step back, withdraw from trying to connect to the audience and just go back and rely on the content because that's what they're there for. Mm-hmm. And that may have probably happened in the past. But that would not stop me from continuing to develop that skill set of trying to connect and be personable in that environment. I think, you know, I usually try to exercise good judgment, and you know, you're always gonna end up failing somewhere down the road, but I think it's because of that and the experience that I have is drawing from those failures. So, you know, I know it's cliche, you can't be afraid to fail. Right, and there's plenty of people that are well known that have failed in the past, and have gone on to do great things. I think it's maybe taking a step back and seeing how you could have done better. And I think I do that. I replay maybe if either it's a class or speaking somewhere or even a client meeting. I do reflect on, you know, how did that go? And maybe even ask other people, right? Because multiple brains are better than one, as to how they perceived it. Because I think if you don't reflect on that or you don't ask other people how it went, people that would be honest with you, then you're really not developing good experience, right? You're not, you may not even be realizing what your failures are.
Making sure you're asking for honest feedback is really important.
Yeah, because you may not know that you had a, you know, what I would call a micro failure, right? You know, it's something that didn't necessarily, you know, blatantly put you out of the game, but it was still something that if it continues to fester, could totally blow you over the next time, right? So if I'm not aware of how I can improve, whether it's me evaluating myself or asking other people to do that, I don't know how you can get better without acknowledging that or receiving that from people that I think would be honest with you. And even if it's sitting there, like, listen, I'm trying to get better at what I'm doing, so I need you to be straight with me. And you're close to me. You've seen me do this several times. Please be honest with me as to what you think I could have done better. You know, what were the highlights? What were kind of some of the lowlights? And what do you think I could have done differently? I think are good questions you can ask someone who can be honest with you.
Do you have any suggestions as to how people can overcome the fear of failure? Because, yes, we know that failure happens, but right. I think most people have some trepidation around the issue of failure in any case.
Yeah. And, you know, listen, I'm still afraid to fail. I think, you know, I'm afraid probably to go and, you know, I've had a lot of entrepreneurial things on the side, but to go 100% and do that and risk what I have now, you know, I'm afraid, you know, so I still have those bouts of being afraid. I think it comes down to, this is where it's funny because I'm saying, hey, connect human emotion, care about what you do, care about other people. But I also know how to, I developed the skill set of being thick-skinned to a certain extent. I think maybe living in New York or realizing that there's a lot of naysayers out there and that, you know, I think I can maybe sit down and listen to those naysayers and continue to develop those fears, or I can keep myself so busy and experimenting at other ways to be successful. I think those are two routes you can go. You can, there's a difference between me saying, take a step back, reflect on what you did, ask people who are honest and positive as far as what you do and how you can do it better, is different from, you know, scouring the web for reactions, right? And negative reactions, right? Because we've been built like that. I think we watched, we watched a news channel at night, right? We're all geared up for negative news, and life wouldn't be the same if we didn't have it, especially when it comes to us. But I think it's learning how to separate that from what would be a positive criticism is critical. And I think the way I deal with that, and I think everybody can have their own way of dealing with it, is I keep myself so busy at doing the next thing to develop either my skill set or speaking to a particular audience. And when I say that, not necessarily in the context of actually speaking, but writing an email, connecting with someone on LinkedIn, reaching out to someone. I'm so busy doing that. If I wasn't busy with my clients, I would be busy with my relationships. There's really no excuse in this, in the time that we live in now, not to be busy. It's just more of a decision. So I think the more time you can spend in being busy and developing those relationships, you'll quickly separate yourself from, I think, mulling in that, you know, that feeling of being trapped and second guessing yourself over and over again, right? Because you're so busy trying to develop a new skill set or experimenting and doing something different, that you're then opened up to new opportunities, and then you start gaining confidence. So if I was to kind of sit back and second question myself over and over again and never go back out there, I probably would be developing more fear as I go along as well. You know, it would just get worse. So I think it's trying to figure out, all right, how do I get back in the game? Do I need to take a step back and take baby steps again and maybe not speak in front of 20, 30 people? Maybe just do meetups and just meet people and get more comfortable in that way? Because that's a way of getting back in the game. There's just, I really strongly believe, unlike 15 years ago, you have really the option to make yourself busy or not. Now, we have different levels of busyness, but now, even if you don't have a job, you can still be busy. You can easily meet up a lot with a lot of people. You can easily educate yourself. And that, I think, is important, and it does develop confidence. And before you know it, without you making a proactive decision of jumping and doing what it is that you desired, you kind of slowly groomed yourself into being put in that situation. You know, I didn't go out to, you know, I didn't have it in my mind to go and speak in front of, you know, a lot of people or you know, teach courses. I think that happened as a result of going out and doing what I could with what I had, which is probably a lot more powerful and more meaningful to maybe someone that is maybe not at my position or my place in my career. Is, you know, I did with what I had. I did it well, and I didn't stop doing it.
Ruben, what are you working on now that you're most excited about?
Excited and afraid. So I was selected to do, I think NYU's their digital marketing certificate program. Doing what's called an asynchronous course. So I'm done very good in the classroom and being able to be in front of people. I'm comfortable in that format, but now I'm kind of taken back to not having an audience and, you know, developing a course strictly from my computer, knowing that I'm going to have an audience for the next few years listening to my voice. So I don't have full control of that. So it's exciting, but I don't have full control of that, right? I don't get to read people. I don't get to be able to pivot in the middle of a lecture. I have to do 20 hours of recording, and I have to hopefully hope that it delivers really well and that it's meaningful, right? Because I've built up a reputation and I was selected as a result of it, and I want to deliver on that. So it's exciting for me right now because I literally have another week to do it, but it's also a challenge, something I've never done before, and something that if there's anything that I've had is the, I guess, the fear of missing out, right? Which is probably why I've it's helped me in a way, but at the same time I need to learn maybe how to say no, and I have, but I maybe know a little bit more. But in this scenario, I took this on because I've never done this before, and it was interesting to me. And you know, I'm honored that I was selected, but at the same time, it's not the most comfortable for me. And so, even where I am in my career now, I think I'm not afraid to experiment with something new. I don't think you ever stop learning or experimenting.
Right. No, it's important to get out of your comfort zone, but also important to know when you need to get help and who to ask and how to move forward.
Yeah, I think it's also, you do have to, I guess, evaluate it. And I think I've always been the personality where, okay, is this way out of my league or is this within the realm, and why don't I want to do this? If it's because of time, understandable, right? Because I have to keep clients happy, I have to keep family happy, etc. But if it's, you know, if it's because, oh, it's something new, I don't know that I want to do this, and for me to say no because I'm going to be out of my comfort zone is not who I've been, and it's not where I've gotten to be where I am today.
Ruben, we're coming close to the end of our interview, and We believe that one of the most vital elements to smash through any plateau in business or in life is to create a community of complementary people with complementary talents. And that's why we always end our interviews with this question. Who do you know outside your own organization that's currently doing work you're especially excited about, and why?
Who do I know? So, you know, I think, and again, it's maybe at another level, you know, and again, I'm not saying disciple and always listen to everything. You know, Gary Vaynerchuk is probably a strong thought leader in the space of digital marketing. So me, I do check up once in a while as to what he's doing, and he's just doing a lot. But is, you know, whether I want to admit it or not, because I hate admitting it, you know, he's an influence on me, and he's done very well, and you know, I can learn from someone like him. So he has his own agency, but he's also invested in a lot of startups. Great speaker. And it's not afraid to take things on, right? So I think it's exciting to see a guy like that. If you look at how he started, I mean, he very humble beginnings as far as, you know, I mean, was in a wine business. When I say humble beginnings, meaning from where he is today and the visibility that he has, you know, and I think similar path in that he started doing his own show and you know, didn't have any traction for a while, and he didn't give it up. He kept going at it. So I think the determination, the hustle, all the, you know, the entrepreneurial, the great speaking skills, all that bundled into this one man is pretty exciting, and is a joy to check in once in a while, because it's good to strive for something like that.
And is there anybody else who might be less well known to the public?
No, I'm just kidding. I think, you know, I think, you know, looking at, you know, I probably can point to, you know, a few clients that I think are doing well. I would say maybe within the few people that I met, and maybe the person that introduced me, right, to you, I think is worthy of a mention as well. You know, Michael, who I think has I've seen him grow a little bit, at least online. You know, we've met a few times, and he's taking his writing skill, which is interesting, right? He's going with the writing round. So he's taking his writing skill.
Michael Shine.
Yes, sorry, Michael Shine. who I, you know, I think he's taking his writing skill and realize what it's complementary to. And the written form has become so important when it comes to your messaging online, and especially with what I do, which is something that he's grown as well as far as visibility within the context of a search engine or even social media. So not just writing for the sake of writing and being compelling to an audience. I think he's kind of graduated that into realizing, well, how do you get found through that writing, right? So I think for him to, you know, I think he's a good model to look at as far as going out of the box, which is, you know, just doing strictly writing and messaging to, okay, well, how does that now, how do I contextualize that to my audience, who at the end of the day, we're looking to be found, right? And writing it is just half the battle. It's also getting people to find it. So I've seen him kind of, the few conversations that we've had, kind of grow and at least start thinking about that and not be afraid to experiment with different things on different projects and aligning with the right people as well. So, you know, it came to mind, obviously, because I made the introduction, but it is good, a good, someone that's probably good to reference and look up as well.
Great. Thank you, Ruben. Ruben, thank you for joining us today on Smashing the Plateau. It's been great having you as our guest.
Sure. Appreciate the time, the opportunity, and hopefully this was valuable for your audience.
You've been listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by 10 Strategic Partners. Be sure to visit our website at smashingtheplateau.com and join our email list to hear many more great interviews like this one. And if you like what you heard, please leave us a review on iTunes by going to smashingtheplateau.com/iTunes. I'm your host, David Schreiner-Kahn, and we'll be talking again soon.